Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which was shared on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I am your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Captain Andrea Gall. Hi, Andrea. Welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back. Thank you. Thank you for the promotion.
Absolutely. You've earned it. You said you weren't here last season, but you were here on season six. So I'm glad to have you back on the show. It's been too long now because of the absurd breaks that I take in between seasons, which I'm really trying to get whittled down, but it's hard. It's been three whole years since we talked. And wow. I listened back to our, I know, wow, amazing. And I listened back to our episode. And, you know, we already know your MASH origin, so we don't have to get into all that. I tried to find like the clip that you were talking about on the BBC of them talking about MASH on the news. Like, yeah. I couldn't find it. I desperately wanted to find that audio. But I, one of the things I did want to follow up with you on is you collect postcards from all the various towns that are related to MASH. And so I'm curious, is that collection continuing 3 years on?
Yeah, it's still continuing. I think I've got most of the main characters, obviously with Hawkeye coming from a fictional place. that's harder. I do have an art postcard that somebody has made of the various hometowns of the characters. So I have got Hawkeye that way. Fortunately, I can't remember who the seller is now, but I've counted that towards my Hawkeye card. But yeah, I'm going through all the various hometowns of the people. So I've got the main ones now. I'm just going through some of the guest characters now as well. So yeah, it is continuing.
That's great. How are they arranged and stored? Do you have them out to look
I've
at,
got,
or is
yeah,
it just in a
got,
book?
I've got
or...
albums. Yeah. Okay. Albums. Okay. I'm not a very organized person generally, but I am when it comes to my postcards. So.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yeah. I was fascinated by that. Of like, what a fun way to, you know, connect sort of a collector's kind of idea to the TV show without necessarily having it to be something directly marketed from the show. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that was very clever and imaginative. So I was, I'm happy to hear that the collection has continued on. Did Margaret, they never established that Margaret had a hometown because she was an army brat.
That's right. I think one of the websites mentions, is it Fort Ord?
She mentions a couple. Fort Benning, she says it one. Yeah. Ord. She does say Ord. Yeah. So,
yes. Okay. So I think I have that one. Okay. I also contacted Jeff Maxwell on many years ago on the MASH Matters podcast to ask if Igor had a hometown, because it's never mentioned. So he says he envisages that Igor came from Wisconsin. So that's next on my list to get.
I love it. I like that you're actually talking to cast members and getting them to write fanfic, actually, because he's connected to the show, whatever the sort of unofficial expanded MASH universe. That's great. I love it. Totally love it. All right. Well, we're here to talk about the 18th episode of season 8, Old Soldiers, a real weepy. It originally aired on January 21st, 1980, written by Dennis Koenig and directed by Charles S. Dubin. In the middle of the night, a call comes in for Colonel Potter. He's furious about being woken up at 3:30 in the morning, but after he takes the call, he calms down and accepts the news, mentioning something about test results don't lie. While Potter is gone, a Red Cross worker named Betty Halpern arrives with a gang of Korean kids who need some basic medical care and some tetanus shots after being stuck in some thorn bushes. Potter checks in at the 477, refusing to say why he's gone. All he seems concerned about is a package due to arrive. He tells Klinger to guard it with his life. Without wounded to take care of, the Korean kids take over the 477th, running around and causing general chaos. Their stay is extended when the doctors discover the kids have a mysterious rash that they can't quite figure out how to treat. The next morning, Potter returns, but is still mum about who he calls his sick friend. After telling him about the kid's rash, Potter figures out that it's because of their diet. They eat horse meat, which is causing a reaction to the tetanus serum. After a tossed-off joke by Hawkeye, Potter goes on a rant about the atrocity of people eating horses, reminiscing about, back in World War I, a man's horse was his best friend. Where do people get off turning them into pork chops? It leaves everyone stunned into silence, and Potter mumbles an apology and leaves. Later, Potter asks Klinger to deliver a series of sealed envelopes addressed to the others. They all open them, and inside is an invitation to Potter's tent the next night. Everyone wants to find out what's going on, but Potter insists he wants to be left alone until then. We see that Potter is spending time in his office listening to old French records. When a little Korean boy wanders in, Potter is sweet and gentle to him, putting him on his lap and showing him his old photographs of himself from World War I. The next night comes around and everyone arrives at Potter's tent at the prescribed time. Everyone is assuming the worst, that Potter is facing a divorce or, even worse, a bad report from his doctor. But Potter explains it's not anything like that. The news is that this is the last of his friend, that the last of his friends from a World War I unit he was part of in France has died. They created a tontine, a pledge, involving a bottle of French wine to be drunk by the last surviving member. Everyone is relieved, and they all share the bottle with Potter, who makes the first toast to his dear departed friends. All right, Andrea, you know, we'll go through it beat by beat like we always do, but yep. What are your general impressions of this episode? Because I get the feeling that this is a favorite among the people that made the show, simply because in both of the reunion specials, they highlight this episode. Like, this episode gets a little more screen time than you would necessarily expect from just sort of an average episode in the middle of the season. So I feel like within the show itself, this was a favorite. How do you fall on it?
Yeah, I enjoy it as well. I think I've mentioned on one of the comments that I'm not generally a crier, but this is one of the few that can get me close to crying. So I just find it so poignant, and I find Harry Morgan's performance mesmerizing. When I was looking over the episodes to prepare for this episode, I just found myself watching the episode and had to remember that, you know, that I need to take notes and observations, and it was hard to do because I just kept watching Harry Morgan. I know it's another Angry Potter episode, and they can be a bit hit or miss, but I think I think his anger is more understandable in this one, and it's less cringy than some of the others. And of course, it's more poignant now that we've lost more members of the MASH family. So, I think it's a top-notch episode. Not short on laughs, but I still think it's enjoyable. And I think when Potter does his speech at the end and he's talking about his friends, I can believe that those people are real. And all we have is a name and a rough date as to when they die. But I can visualize that scene. I can visualize those men. And that's purely down to Harry Morgan's performance, I think.
Yeah, over the course of all the episodes we've done of the show, I talk about that if they ever did a MASH prequel show, which I don't want to see, by the way, I don't want to see it at all. Don't do it. but if you did do it, because, you know, all IP must be exploited, as we know from these companies. Like, you could do the Young Sherman Potter Chronicles show, where it would be kind of like the Young Indiana Jones, except good. And this is obviously the episode that cements all that, because, as you just said, we get the names. We get the names of the people. Now, obviously, we'll learn a little bit. Some of them didn't last very long past the tontine. But nevertheless, you could see, we're like, hey, there's going to be a World War I set series about Young Sherman Potter, and these are the adventures of him and Gresky and Stein and all these people. This is it. This is the most concrete example of that. And yes, it is an Angry Potter episode, which I have talked about. They're not my favorites. But as you say, this one's the most fleshed out. It makes the most sense. You know, earlier in the season, he was mad because he forgot his anniversary, so he took it out on everyone else. I'm like, what? Like, does this make any sense? This one is, okay, he's feeling his age. And there have been other episodes where he has remarked, like in the interview, that he does feel a sense of loneliness at the 477th because he is so much older than everyone else. I mean, probably the nearest person to his age is, I guess, Winchester, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and he's a good 20 years older than Winchester. So he feels it. And so to know that these friends you had in your youth are dying off one by one and you're the last one, yes, of course, that would make you to feel incredibly melancholy. I don't belong to any sort of really organized group. I mean, I guess the network that we've created is the closest. And if I saw myself becoming the last one, that would, sure, you know, that would weigh on you in a way that, you know, it probably is unimaginable at the age I'm at now. So, yes, we're going to do an Angry Potter one, but at least make it the whole show. you know, which is the whole episode. There's no real B, other than the thing with the kids, there's no real B plot to this. It's really the whole episode. So the show opens with a shot of the compound as we hear the phone ring and we see Klinger get up and walk across the compound. And it's funny, we never, you never get a real full sense of where all the tents are in relation to one another. You kind of know the swamp is in the center, right? But at least here we see Klinger walk from his office to Potter's tent. Now we get a full, okay, that's where Potter's tent is in relation. And it's sort of funny that when they talk about it, they make it seem like it's like a long walk and you're like, it's probably eight steps. From the-
I like that opening shot though. I think it does give a sense of time and place. I like it. I think it's an interesting way to open the program.
I noticed that over the course of the later seasons, MASH has completely dropped the idea that there are guards on the compound. That used to be a big gag, right? Because Klinger was always one of the guards. Yeah. And sometimes the aforementioned Igor was a guard. They've just dropped all that. They've got rid of the idea that we don't have guards on the compound anymore. It's okay. It's all fine, you know, because as we say, it's very, very quiet. So Klinger rounds up Potter and Potter, you know, answers the phone. And he says, you know, this better be good. And then he immediately gets, you know, he changes his tone where he says, oh, I see that bad. And, you know, he even says, you're sure. And he's like, test results don't lie, which obviously we're trying to misdirect the audience because we're thinking, oh, no, you know, that's really now I think we all know. We're not going to kill Colonel Potter off. Yeah. We're not going to happen. But maybe it's his wife, right? Maybe it's Mildred or something. That would be terrible, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's kind of a grim opening. And then they ask about who's going to be in charge. And Potter says, well, I'll put Pierce in charge. And Klinger's like, well, won't that put Winchester's nose out of joint? And Potter's like, I don't really care. And so I'm very much glad that they didn't go to that beat again. Like, you know, it's like, no, Hawkeye's right. He knows how to do it now. It's all good. It's fine.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think it shows that Potter does know his personnel, and he knows he can trust Hawkeye this time around. He knows his stuff.
Knows what he can do. They've all figured it out. Like, okay, Hawkeye is, you know, he can handle it better. Everyone knows how to handle it better. And, you know, and of course, Hawkeye's not really in charge. And especially when there's nothing to do, right? That's even better. There's no wounded to worry about, anything like that. So Hawkeye and BJ the next morning are walking the compound, and that's where they meet Betty Halperin from the Red Cross with her little group of Korean children. Now, I don't understand why this is not Meg Craddy.
No, I wondered that as well. Because I know Hope Summers had passed away by this point, but Anne Duran was still acting at the time. So yeah, I wondered that myself.
Now, I mean, they had recast it anyway, so just could have just have the actor here playing Betty Halperin is, by the way, named Jane Connell, born 1925, died 2013. She was in a couple movies. She was in the disastrous Lucille Ball version of MAME from the 1970s. She's in Wonton Tan, The Dog That Saved Hollywood, which features 75 famous old-time movie stars. And a slight connection to MASH, she was in the only movie that Jack Lemmon ever directed called Koch, which features in its cast Larry Linville in a supporting role. So there's a little connection that's a film that it's a film directed by Jack Lemmon starring Walter Matthau. So if you're a Lemmon Matthau fan, like I am, it is kind of like a side piece to their history together. And that, he directed Matthau. Lemmon is not in the movie, but nevertheless, it's a connection. But yeah, Larry Linville's in the movie. But anyway, she's Betty Halperin. And she brings in her whole group of kids, and they start immediately analyzing them. And they say, you know, okay, we got to get shots for the kids and stuff like that. And that, of course, as we've talked about in the previous episodes, that breeds an air of life in the unit because it's kids and they're running around. Yeah. And it's very, very cute. And then we see Potter following up. I like that they built the set. They built this little hospital set. For Potter to call. I love this giant red phone that he uses to call. Like, I'm sure it's it's period accurate. Maybe those are the kind of phones they had in the military bases, but it's this giant red box with this big black dial. Like, it's very striking. Yeah. I don't use the phones looking like that.
Yeah, it stands out against the white background as well. It's
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Very, very different looking to 4077th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a nurse in the background sitting at a desk talking on the phone. We don't hear her, so she doesn't get a line, so she's not credited. But I've always I wondered, is that an actor or is that just somebody on staff, right? Is that somebody on the MASH production unit that just sit over there and talk on the phone? You know? You don't have to do anything. It's fine.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that's an interesting question. Yeah,
I don't know what the necessarily legalities are into that, but I know that if you get a line, you have to be paid and credited. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking if you're just literally a background piece, they could just get somebody off the secretarial pool and throw them in there and have them talk. And I love that Potter's like, are you getting work done or are you just sitting there smoking my cigars? And of course, that's exactly what Clinger's
doing. Yeah. It goes back to my point that he knows his stuff. He knows exactly what Clinger's up to. Yeah.
So then we go to the mess tent and we see again the kids are running rampant. They're just Mulcahy is even trying to control the chaos. We see Margaret chasing after one of the kids and laughing. And it's so cute, right? We've seen that in other episodes that Margaret loves kids and she's great with them. Like she's really, really good with them. And so I like that as a background detail that as the doctors are talking to Betty Halperin, she's just there and she's hugging one of them and she's like rubbing the one kid's hair. It's such a great, it's just such a nice detail for Margaret to be able to have that feature.
It's definitely, it's a sweet little scene. Yeah. It's despite the chaos, it's sweet.
Yeah. So then, they notice this little rash on one of the kids and they have Hawkeye take a look at it and they realize this, okay, they're probably having shock from the inoculations. And then they realize, okay, well, because of that, the kids have to stay overnight. And then they get another scene of the kids in chaos in post-op. And there's another scene of Margaret chasing one of the kids and she's smiling. She's smiling while she's doing it, which is so fun. Yeah. Again, we just talked about this, but Margaret is so buttoned down. And so things have to run right and run straight. But when it's the kids, she's totally okay with it, right? Yeah. She's like, you can't imagine any other context of Margaret running through post-op in that kind of heedless joy, you can't picture it. But when it's with kids, she's totally okay with it. And it's just, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's also, I also like seeing BJ just calmly carry the little girl to bed as well. And I think it shows that he's going to be a good dad when he gets home and eventually is able to be a dad to Erin. That's sweet as well.
Speaking of people that are going to be good dads, because at that point, Clinger walks in carrying one of the girls and he calls her Rita. And he says, you know why I call you Rita? Because you're as pretty. He's like, you're like my favorite movie star. Rita Hayworth, you're as pretty as she is, which is such a sweet, it brings out such a warmth in all these characters. I mean, we already knew it. These characters already have lots of warmth, but, it's really, really sweet. The young girl playing the green girl is named Sally Imamura. This is her first of two MASHes. Those are her only TV credits. So I talked about this in other episodes. I'm always fascinated, right? There's a kid out there like my age, who's now a middle-aged woman who's like, oh yeah, I did two MASHes when I was a kid. Like that's a fun detail to just drop at parties, right? Tell us something about yourself. Well, I love gardening, and oh yeah, I was in two episodes of one of the most popular TV series of all time. Huh? What? I love all that stuff. This is great. So they say goodnight to the kids because they said there's literally nobody in post-op. And then Potter arrives and then he sees the kids running by. And of course, he's a little like, what's going on? And then sitting at Clinger's desk is the little girl wearing a Toledo Mudhens hat, which is, again, so adorable. I love that. And then he's like, he introduces her and he's like, who's this? And he says, oh, this is my private Rita, existent executive clerk. cute as a bug in a Persian rug, isn't she? And then Potter says, yeah, she's a Korean Myrna Loy, all right. I love that that's Potter's go-to.
Yes, yeah.
Myrna, I love Myrna Loy. I'm a huge fan of Myrna Loy, so I appreciate that. But I like that it could have been any name, right, of that actor. Yeah. And I actually did research to see if Harry Morgan had done any movies with Myrna Loy, because he came from that era, and I could not find any connection to those two. Now, they might have known each other, but as far as I know, there is no movie that features both Harry Morgan and Myrna Loy, which would have been a nice connection.
It would. It would have been a good film as well.
Have you ever seen any old-timey movie with Harry Morgan in it?
I've seen Inherit the Wind.
Okay. Clap, one of my favorites.
I'm sure I will have seen others as well, but that's the one that stands out.
He's great in that. He plays the judge in that. That is like one of my top four favorite movies. It's on my like Letterboxd four favorites is one of that. Now, first of all, Harry Morgan looked old when he was young. Yeah. He could not pass for, even when he was in his 20s, he didn't look like he was in his 20s. And as he got to the point of, say, Inherit the Wind, which was made in 1960, he had then completely moved on to playing authority figures. He was cops and judges. But when you see him in a younger-ish role, it's weird. It's Colonel Potter. You know what I mean? It's still Colonel Potter. He's in a film noir movie, I believe. Oh, I should have looked it up. I'm blanking. I think it's called The Big Clock. And he plays the sort of right-hand man to this mobster. And at one point, he's like the guy's masseuse. And he's like giving the guy a rub down, and it just looks like Colonel Potter doing this. Very, very strange.
Does he still have the same voice, that gravelly kind of voice?
In that movie, he doesn't talk. He never gets a line, so you don't hear. But yes, he did talk. He's in one of his earliest films is a Gene Tierney movie called Dragonwick. And he plays like a farmhand in that. And he kind of has that brain. So he couldn't change it. He just couldn't change it no matter what. But, anyway, I just thought that was so cute that of all the people that met. Like, I just wondered, like, was that the writers? Was that Harry Morgan? Like, what do you want to say, Harry? Yeah, she's a Korean Gene Tierney. She's a Korean Vivian Lee. She's a Korean, how did we land on Myrna Loy? Potter is a little like, all right, he's not warming up a little bit. He's just kind of, all right. And then we have the scene, as I mentioned, in the mess tent where they're trying to get the one little boy to eat, and he kind of really doesn't want to, of course, so the food is terrible, and they're trying to figure out why do these kids are having this reaction. They're all friendly to Colonel Potter. By the way, I want to mention there is a little kid. There's two little kids. There's the one that they're trying to get to eat, and then there's another one sitting next to Winchester.
Yes, I noticed that as well.
And then in a later moment, that kid's going to be sitting on Winchester's lap.
Yeah,
which again is so sweet, right? That's so not anything we expect out of Charles.
No, I noticed that as well, and I thought, oh, that's, yeah.
I like that it brings it out in all of them, right? I mean, BJ, obviously, we know, but I love that it all, every one of them is like, they just want to, be touching the kid, be like physically interacting with the kids. Yeah. And it's really, really sweet. So they make this joke about the horse meat, and that's what sets Colonel Potter off. And he says, horses is a noble beast. What right do people have making pork chops out of them? And he says, have you ever seen a cow or a pig? They're ugly. You're doing a favor by eating them. So over here as the vegetarian of 30 years, I can't agree with that. No, plus, I don't think cows or pigs are ugly. I think Colonel Potter's wrong about that.
Yeah, I think he's wrong about that as well. I love horses, as I mentioned on my last. So I
guess that's right.
I don't think cows or pigs are ugly at all.
No, they're very sweet, right? Have you ever rubbed nuzzled a cow's head? They're like big dogs, they're really, really sweet. Do you get a chance to ride very much?
Not so much now. No, it's too expensive, really. So talking about collecting things, my mum collects pig ornaments or memorabilia or things like that. My mum loves pigs. So
good for her. There you go.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
But yeah, we see that Colonel Potter has a selective view of animals, you know. And I can imagine if you spent World War I running around on your horse having adventures, you would have, and obviously he is a horseman. We know he's got Sophie and stuff like that, but so he just doesn't regard cows or pigs. But yes, cows or pigs are ugly. Well, that's in the eye of the beholder, sir. So I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the act break, and it leaves everybody sort of stunned of like, well, what is, you know, and I imagine like Betty Halpern is like, is that the way that guy is all the time? You know? No, it's all right. So we come back. And the package arrives that Potter is waiting for, and Klinger asks what it is, and Potter says, "Curiosity KO'd the feline." Now, I'm calling that line out because that is the line MASH writer Ken Levine, on his blog, and later on, and obviously he was on staff at this point and worked on the show all the way till the end of the series. He was occasionally critical of some of the writing on MASH, of which he was part, and he thought some of it was a little too cutesy for its own good. And this was the line that he called out. He said, he said there was an episode where Potter says curiosity KO'd the feline. He says, "No one talks like that." So that's the line. So obviously he was digging at in this episode. Dennis Kettig is the credited writer, but that's the line. That line always jumps out at me just because I know Ken Levine was like, no one talks like that. What are you doing? So
it is a little bit overdone, but I can't say it's bothered me particularly.
I would not have noticed it had Ken Levine not mentioned it. Yeah. You know, I just would not have. So anyway, the doctors are working on the serum for the kids, and Klinger brings in the invites. Once again, we are taught every time the show has to delineate the core group, it's of course our main cast. I mean, of course it is. That's how it works.
Yeah.
But it is
yeah.
sort of funny that it's like there are no other real close friendships in Potter. Yeah. This is it. These are the people.
Yeah.
None of the nurses, none of the – there's going to be a later episode where Hawkeye does the same thing, which is even more awkward. But we'll do that when we get to it. Because he's slept with some of these people. we'll talk about that when we get to it. But so, of course, everyone is just confused as to what it is. And, you know, I got to say, Potter's a little bit of a drama queen. Right? Like, this is like a little dramatic. Like, maybe you could just tell them, "Hey, I'm going through something. It's okay, but I'd like to talk to you all about it tomorrow. Until then, I'm just leave me alone." But instead, he kind of writes it like it's an Agatha Christie mystery. Like, you know, come on.
Yeah.
You're kind of bringing it on yourself and being so mysterious.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's reasonable for the rest of the crew to believe that something's wrong, you know, something's wrong with Potter, that he's the one that's ill. I think that's an entirely reasonable assumption for them to make, because of everything, you know, they've added it all up together and that's what they think, and I think that's a reasonable conclusion for them to come to.
Winchester's the one who says I pray that I'm wrong, but it does, you're like, he's waiting for a package, he's talking to doctors. I do love that when the first instinct they say is divorce, and Margaret dismisses that out of hand completely.
Yeah.
She's like, no, who would divorce such a beautiful, wonderful man like that?
Yeah. Oh, she says something similar in the finale as well, doesn't she? A sweet, wonderful, sweet man.
I like that little bit of character detail that she's just immediately is like, don't end with that. no human person would divorce Sherman Potter. Like, come on, that's nuts. I think that's really sweet. So they inoculate all the kids, and they ask Klinger, you know, what's Potter doing, and they said he's not doing anything but listening to old French records, and then we see that he is in fact doing that, and then he's looking at a photo, we don't see the photo, and then there's one little boy, the kid that they were trying to get to eat, wanders in. That is actor Jason Otage, hope I'm saying that right, plays Korean Boy. He basically went on, he has no other acting credits. He went on to having careers, not career, a career in the production department of various TV shows and stuff. So again, the vagaries of, you know, television careers, of acting careers, of how they go. But Potter is not so caught up that he can't be sweet to this kid. And of course, this kid has certainly never seen a record player, right? And he's sort of fascinated, and he does the hand gesture where he's spinning around, and you know, he's like, yeah, yeah, round and round. And then he puts the kid up on his lap and shows him this picture, and then he says, the kid like points to it and is kind of confused, and he's like, that's me. It's really sweet. Again, this is a very weepy sweet episode, but this is one of those scenes.
I do like that scene, and I think if they'd ever have done another episode like Hawkeye where they just concentrated on a single character, I think Harry Morgan Potter could have pulled it off, because he's basically monologuing here, really. With this scene, I know he's got the kid to talk to, but it is a monologue, really, because
The kid's mute. But the kid doesn't say anything. That is something that I wish they had done more of, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that would have been really interesting to, maybe not every character wants a season, make it become so rote, but it might have been interesting, right, to do. And I agree. I mean, I think maybe a whole Klinger episode might have been pushing it, but a whole Potter episode, you know, that would have been really interesting to like have him, put him in some situation where he's all by himself or something like that. So anyway, it's the next morning, and they say goodbye to all the kids because everything has worked out. And then we cut to later on at night, and they're all afraid to go in. Right. They don't, because they almost kind of like, they're like, we know, but we don't want to know, and whatever. And then finally, like, all right. And they go in, and then, Potter is wearing his World War One uniform, his like sort of dress blue. It's not blue in this case, but his uniform, and he brings them all in, and they of course think he's dying, and Margaret hugs him.
Yeah.
And you know, they're like, she's like, he's like, why are you guys acting this way? Which again is like, well, what do you think? You've been really weird, dude. Like, what?
Charles is close to tears as well. He's got tears streaming down his face as well. It's interesting. I do wonder whether, I mean, I know everything was scripted in MASH, but was there a chance that maybe they thought Harry was leaving, or I don't know, but it seems, or are they, obviously they're all good actors, but it seemed, the reaction seemed real almost. I don't know.
They've just been caught up in the moment, you know, just that it's, you know, these scenes are really all Harry Morgan. The other characters get some lines. And I do find, again, I like the bit of blocking where everyone is sitting to the right of the frame, except for Margaret, who was sort of like, and I mentioned this in a previous episode of just this season, where she's sort of like the co-host, you know, she's like, when Potter was doing this, talking about Korean hemorrhagic fever in Mr. and Mrs. Who, she's sort of like assisting him. And so everyone here is looking at him, except she's sitting on sort of like a stool behind him in the scene. So it's kind of like, she's physically within his orbit the way the others are not. And it's a nice, again, nice little piece of scene setting. He finally explains, you know, what's happened. And he says, we were in France under heavy, my friends were in a heavy artillery barrage. And he says, we found this bottle of wine, and we decided, there was a group of the five of us, and we decided that we were going to save this. He says, let some legal eagle stow it for us. And then he pulls out this picture, gives it to Margaret, and he reveals that they created this group. And I love when he says, does anybody know what a tontine is? And of course, Winchester knows what it is. He says, yes, it's a pledge. And then he reveals that, yes, this was the group, and I'm the last surviving member. The last one before me, the penultimate member, just died in Tokyo. And that sends a wave of relief over everybody. And that's what it is. So I am fascinated as to the sort of details of this, of like, you hire a lawyer to to hold this bottle for you.
Yeah.
And he what works for you for 60 years?
Yeah, because I would have only been young at the time as well when the war finished. So it was a lot of foresight for them to think that. But,
they hired this lawyer in like 1918. It is now 1952. Like, okay. Like that. I mean, I know they probably just put it in a safe deposit box. And then, but still, like, can you hire a lawyer and say, hey, you're on the hook to let us know about this for the next 5 decades? Like, I don't know. How does that work? I don't know.
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're right. That's,
Because he gets a phone call, right? He gets the phone call at the beginning of the episode. Right. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. Did they have safe deposit? But I don't know, whatever. So, and then, so Potter decides, you know, he's like, I'd like you all to share a drink with me. And then he says, but I want to have the first toast. And he does the speech. And I love that the names of the people in his unit are the ethnically diverse, right? It's one of each. We've got Ryan. Okay. Who's kind of, that's like a waspy middle American name, although Potter's from sort of the middle. And then Gianelli. Okay. We've got Italian. Stein, clearly Brooklyn Jewish. And then Grusky, who's kind of middle European, Middle Eastern. Yeah. Not Middle Eastern, like European, you know, like Polish or something. So that's like right out of every World War II movie, is that the five that we're following are all really ethnically diverse guys. So that's the kind of movie that Harry Potter could have been in when he was younger.
When I was a student, I was in Germany for a time, and one of my fellow students was American, and he was looking at the names, and he was saying all the different names. It's how that would be typical in America to have all the different, because we were students from all over the world. And the one name that he hadn't come across before was the very English Hepplethwaite. But all the other names that seemed different for me that I hadn't come across before, he's like, oh yeah, that's standard in America. I've always remembered that for some reason. I thought about that when I watched that scene.
It really is. If you said, if you've ever seen any World War II movie and it follows a bunch of dog faces, that's always what they do. It's always, there's one guy from Brooklyn, there's one guy from Nebraska, there's one guy, like, it's just always how they do it. And so there's the show, everybody. Disney, you're looking for content. If you're going to do, again, don't do it, but if you're going to do it, do the MASH prequel show. Make this the MASH prequel show. Don't reboot the show. No. Don't do that. Nobody needs that. But you can do Young Sherman Potter Chronicles. That'll be fine. So he does the toast, and you know, it is, as we said, very weepy. Harry Morgan's eyes are you know, tearing up, and you have to think that this man, this actor, has seen a lot. He's met a lot of people. He's done a lot. He's seen a lot. He's, you know, that's the verisimilitude of the show, is that, yes, they're actors and they're acting, but nevertheless, this is somebody who, you know, has done and seen things that his other cast have not. And he's probably, you know, the way acting is supposed to work, you're recalling things from your life that, you know, only you know about. And he's really pulling that, and you mentioned it's, as you see, Charles puts his head down a little, and he's got a tear running down his face. Very, very interesting.
It's as I say, I'm not a crier, but this is good. This scene, the toboggan cap scene with Charles and Henry Blake's death, are the only times where I've come close to crying. But I'm not generally a crier, but this one, had me the last time I watched it. As I say, it's all the more poignant now that the MASH cast themselves are diminishing as well.
It's a grim thought, right? But you can't help it. But
sorry,
it's like,
sorry to bring that up.
But you can't, you know, I mean, it's just natural. You're just like, well, now there's only a handful of them left, you know. And it is, it's just like, okay, it's the natural passage of time. And hopefully we all know that we lost Loretta not that long ago, and hopefully that will be the last one for a while. Let's hope, you know, keep everybody going for a really long time. So that's the end of the main part of the episode. And then we come back for this little jokey bumper where Potter walks in and he issues an order where he says that the laundry personnel as of this date are prohibited from the use of starch in laundering clothing, especially forbidden, especially my shorts. And then he wanders off, and there's like this weird pause where Klinger is watching Potter kind of amble away, and they pause right as Jamie Farr's head is turning.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I wondered, did he have a line that they decided to cut? Or is it just, they normally don't pause when someone's in motion like that.
Yeah.
And it's only because, again, I've seen this episode 90 million times. I don't even notice it, but it's just a little weird little detail, but it's a jokey way to end a very serious episode. As we
yes. Talk. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't, it's a bit of a mood whiplash, but I can understand why they ended it that way.
Now, let me ask you, Andre, do you have, outside of the postcards, do you have, like, an object? You don't even have to tell us what it is if you don't want to, but do you have any object that you would be like, you would want to say pass down to somebody else if that was the case? I mean, the tontine is a little bit different, but I don't expect you to be part of a tontine. Yeah. Oh, that's why I wanted to do the show, Rob, is because I'm also part of a tontine. That's what I'm but is there any, I will say, like, most of the stuff that I have that I hold on to that is meaningful to me, my wife and I don't have kids. We have nephews and nieces, but I don't expect them to take all that stuff on. That's a burden to them.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff that I own is meaningful to me. And it's a grim thought, but this is a darker episode. Like, if after I die, all that stuff just gets donated, I'm okay with that because it has meaning to me. It doesn't have meaning to other people, but that's okay. Everything can't mean everything to everybody. That's not the way the world works. But is there any object that you have in your mind that you would be like, I would want my family to hold on to this because of this other, because of just reasons that it's so valuable to you?
Yeah, there are. I mean, I don't have children either. I've got lots of nieces and nephews and great nieces and nephews. And I have wondered about what's going to happen to my postcards when the time comes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. But there is the one thing that I would save if there was a fire is it's a painting that my dad did of where I used to live. And that's the thing that I would hopefully pass down, and hopefully people would want it. I mean, my brother has some of my dad's paintings that he did.
Oh, that's beautiful. Did your dad paint a lot?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, but this one's particularly special because it's where it's near where I used to live, and it's funny enough, it was kind of based off a postcard as well. So there's that connection there as well. But yeah, that definitely it's a couple of paintings that he's done or drawings that he's done that I would definitely keep. It's the only I'm in rented accommodation, so we're not really allowed a lot of things up on the walls or anything, but I've made sure that picture is up there.
That's beautiful. That's great. That's wonderful. What kind of you mind me asking, what kind of paints what was his, like, acrylics or oils?
Yeah, I did watercolors, acrylics. Okay. He also did photography as well.
Wow.
I don't pick out him, unfortunately. My niece, my youngest niece, my youngest nephew, he's got a level in photography, so he's taken after my dad in that way. And my niece, she's nearly 15, she's a talented artist as well. Well, I think she is. Maybe I'm biased, but I think she's got potential there to be very good. So
that's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, like I said, the only thing I can think of, and I've mentioned it on the show ad nauseum, so I'm sure people are tired of hearing about it, but the only object I think that I would want to, like, literally hand down to somebody is my autographed Hot Lips action figure that Loretta Swit signed, because it's irreplaceable. And I can't imagine a point in my life where I would be needing to get rid of it. I just can't imagine that I would be downsizing to the point where I couldn't make space for an object so small as that. But I will say, this is the grim thought sometimes you have laying in your bed at night or whatever, but, like, I have thought, if I ever wanted to get rid of it, there are, thanks to this show, there are numerous people that I think I could gift it to that I know would give it a good home because I know they would cherish it the way that I cherish it. So I'm kind of like, because, you know, I wouldn't want that to end up donated to Goodwill because of the connection to Loretta. So I know that like there's lots of people that I think if I said, hey, would you, you know, I'm downsizing. I can't imagine where I would be living that I don't have 8 inches of space to donate to that item. But that's like the one thing that I think of that I'd like, okay, I would want to gift that to someone who was a MASH fan to say, okay, I think you would appreciate this. So, you know, all of you out there listening, play your cards right, and you might be gifted the Loretta Swit action figure maybe someday. So anyway, so that's Old Soldiers, a fine episode, certainly unique, playing to the strengths of Harry Morgan as an actor and the character. So, so Andrea, we should, you know, this will be tough because there's not a lot of funny lines in this one on purpose, do you have a favorite line or joke from the show?
I think the one joke that did actually make me laugh, and it's just such a silly joke, and it's not normally my kind of humor, but the when somebody mentions the Munchkin hordes and BG says, oh, have you been hoarding Munchkins again, Charles? I don't know, that tickled me for some reason, that line. and Charles is kind of like, I've never actually been able to work out what Charles says in answer to that, but he does a kind of like eye roll, kind of like a, you know, typical BJ humor there,
right?
So I like that little scene. I think my favorite moments obviously are the Harry Morgan monologues, but I also like, not a funny line, but I like Father McKay's line when I can't remember who says, oh, maybe he should tell us something, and Father McKay says, well, maybe he has, you know, when he's talking about the invites. It's just a small little line, but I just thought, yeah, that says it all. So those two lines, I think. But I mean, you can't beat the scenes with Colonel Potter. I think they're the main focus of the episode. And again, every time I watch it, I'm just sat there in awe of his performance. I did also want to say something about the song that he was listening to, "The Roses of Picardy," because I found a few information about that from old newspaper reports. Is that after the Second World War, soldiers that were suffering from what was then called shell shock, what we call PTSD now, when they were learning to speak again, they used singing to help them with that. And one of the favourite songs that they used was that piece of music, was that song. And apparently it was written down on the back of a bus ticket. So it's interesting history about the song. So I found a newspaper article from the surgeon Sir Frederick Mott, who talks about singing as an uplifting mental diversion, and he mentions that song is probably the most popular one. And then another chap, a Sergeant Wallace of the Royal Fusiliers, credits that song and singing to curing his issues with speech. So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit about the song. And I don't know whether it was intentional that it's that song that he's listening to that enables him to talk to the child, or if it's just a happy coincidence. But
that's really interesting. That's a great detail. I don't know. I my hunch would be, I bet they looked that up and that's why they did it. Of all the songs.
Yeah.
Right. Of all the songs, that's a piece of research they could have found. Right.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Yeah. That's great. I didn't know any of that. That's a great find, Andre. Thank you. That's really good. My favorite line, actually, it is a joke where it's when the little girl is at Klinger's desk and Potter is sitting there kind of eyeing it. And then she types. She finishes her typing and yells, "Aha!" And Klinger pulls the paper out of the typewriter, and he's like, "Sir, this girl is a prodigy. She just typed Dribniff, and correctly, I might add." That was really very sweet. Yeah, and her Toledo Mudheads hat. Yeah. Oh, that's great stuff. It's very, very. He's Klinger's so good with kids.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
Oh,
But so anyway, that's Old Soldiers, everybody. Andrea, thank you so much for coming back. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, you too. It's good to be back. two appearances, I think that makes me the equivalent of Sam Pack in MASH terms. Or
we will have, you know, we'll have to get you back for next season to think about what you want to do for season then. Hopefully, some more postcards will roll in between now and then.
Yeah.
So, well, again, and thank you all for listening to the show. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of MASHcast on our website, finewaterpodcast.com. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And then if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on the show of your choice. So a big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K., Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. So we will be back next week. But until then, that is all.
The Winchester, Charles.
Huh? Curiouser and curiouser. What does this contain, Klinger?
Beats me, and I read mine.